This podcast is intended for investment professionals only.
So hello, and welcome to LGIM Talks. My name is Anthony Penson, and I'm an institutional content manager here at LGIM. This edition of LGIM Talks is a little different from usual, as today we'll be hosting a pod from our partner business over at LGRI, where my colleagues will be discussing the power of partnerships and how LGIM and LGRI work together to bring seamless pension and game solutions to clients. Enjoy.
Hi everyone, I'm here today with Matthew Webb and Adrian Summerfield, and we'll be talking about the power of partnerships. This is insurance and investment businesses coming together and helping schemes on their de-risking journey to endgame. But before we dive straight into that, I'd like to welcome the guests, and would you be able to give a sort of brief intro to yourself, please?
Thanks, Roshni. So Matthew Webb, so I'm head of endgame solutions within legal and general investment management. And my role with my team is to help our pension fund clients on their journey through their endgame, which for the majority of them is pension risk transfer with an insurance company.
Thanks, Matt. And Adrian?
Good morning, Roshni. So yeah, so my name is Adrian Summerfield. I'm a director in the pensions risk transfer business of Legal and General. And our team are effectively, the main role is to develop and ultimately execute the bulk annuity transactions that are kind of the end of a client, typically the end of a client's journey.
Great. Thanks both. And thank you both for being here today. I guess we're here to talk about partnerships, but before we dive into that and what that entails, let's talk about how we're seeing such a big increase in demand for buy-ins and buyouts. Matt, what would you say you're seeing from an investment point of view here?
Well, the consequence of increasing bond yields really over the last 12 months or so have significantly changed funding levels for pension schemes. I mean, I'd go so far as to say that we're in something of an inflection point because the change has been so quick and so marked across the board. So to give you some statistics, the pensions regulator recently came out and said almost a quarter of pension schemes in the UK, that would be about £350 billion by the end of July numbers, are already fully funded on a buyout basis. Recent data from the Pension Protection Fund suggests that almost all schemes in the UK are now in surplus on a PPS basis. The total deficit across the whole system is around £2 billion out of £950 billion of PPF liabilities, so a tiny fraction. Frankly, something that we could never really expected 10 or 15 years ago. But it's the individual cases that have been particularly marked. Those schemes that weren't particularly well hedged against bond yields back in September have seen the biggest changes. And they've seen them in such an unexpected way. We've seen schemes that are 110, 120, 140% funded on a buyout basis because they were under hedged to rising bond yields. And they find themselves, instead of a buyout horizon of, say, 10 years away, it's right now. How do I execute today? And going back, I think that's why we're at this inflection point, because if there really is £350 billion worth of demand out there for buyouts in a market that last year transacted almost but not quite £30 billion, then how are we going to cope? How are we going to get all of those pension schemes to their endgame?
And we'll get back to your point on how and how we can do this. Adrian, obviously you and I work on the insurer side, so we know how busy this is. From an insurer point of view, do you have anything to add?
Well, I think I'd really just echo what Matt was saying. I think we are seeing an incredibly busy year because of the market events that have happened. And, you know, talk statistics for a little bit, you know, we have written 6.8 billion of transactions already this year, which in comparison to last year is almost exactly the same as what we did in a whole year. So it's kind of a good way of illustrating the demand we're seeing. I think that this early demand in the year is coming from the fact that some schemes were, you know, ready to transact, but they just didn't quite have the affordability. The market events have happened as they did in Q4, and suddenly that affordability is there, and those schemes have been able to take advantage of all that prep work they've done, move quickly and execute, and that's why we have had such a successful time. And then going forward, I say the pipeline, it remains exceptionally strong and is growing. It continues to grow all the time for lots of the reasons Matt said. I mean, I wouldn't say we're quite at the £350 billion of demand yet, but it's a very, very large pipeline. And all these schemes, which perhaps were thinking they'd be ready to come to market in 5-10 years' time, are suddenly there and want to know how to engage with us to get their scheme to buy it fully de-risk.
It's obviously been a busy half year, and hopefully this continues over to the next half year. Has this been quite challenging?
I think what we're seeing because of the market movements, a lot of schemes are economically ready to transact if they can realise their asset value, they can afford to buy out, but they're not practically ready. There are some hurdles to overcome, which links back to the previous podcast, which talked about how you might prepare practically to come to market. And I think, as I say, what these schemes actually need is an investment solution which allows them to lock down the great position they're finding themselves in, or get them to that great position whilst they have the time to spend preparing properly, whether that's preparing their assets, their data, or their governance plan, etc. So I guess that's exactly where the concept of partnerships comes in, and why we're here today. We think it's really powerful to kind of perhaps work in partnership with our own investment management team to kind of create a holistic solution which covers both being ready to transfer to buyout at the right time, but what is that strategy to allow you to prepare in the right way.
And I guess this is where Matt comes in. How would you see yourself engaging with an insurer from an investment perspective?
Well, the question the clients are trying to address is how long am I going to be waiting before I can execute? What else have I got to do in my governance and other budget to get ready? And in that period, I'm looking for a holding pattern, if you will, a holding pattern before we come into land for this buyout transaction. And this could be 6 months, it could be many years whilst things have been getting ready. And what are the objectives I've got in that period? Well, most importantly, most fundamentally, given the fantastic position that we find ourselves in, is to stay well enough funded to be able to transact. So I want to lock down, as Adrian was saying, I want to lock down the risk and I want to get ready. So three things. Firstly, buyout funding level volatility. We need to know, what are the risk sensitivities? How do we stay at this position? And then two, have I got time? How do I get ready? How do I make myself most efficient, as efficient as possible, to transact to the insurer? And then three, and this is an elephant in the room for many clients, is what do we do about illiquids if we hold them? Many pension schemes, particularly the ones I mentioned earlier that are surprisingly finding themselves 120% funded, were investing in illiquid assets for the long term. They had a 7, a 10, a 15-year time horizon to invest in illiquid assets, and all of a sudden, now they need to transact. So what do we do?
So going back to your first point, volatility, could you sort of give us a bit more here, like explain a bit more what you mean by that?
So we know that, broadly speaking, insurance companies are investing in corporate bonds and corporate bond-like investments because that's the way Solvency II incentivize the insurance system to invest. We also know that they don't like unrewarded risks. So we know that their LDI portfolios, their rates and inflation hedging, is going to be high. So I'm expecting that the key economic drivers of buyout funding level volatility is the difference in interest rate, inflation, and credit spread sensitivity as between what the pension fund is holding and what the insurance company is holding. The problem I have is I don't exactly know what the insurance company is holding. So how do I set my target?
And I think it's a good point. And I think the challenge is that every insurer is different. We do invest in credit-like assets, but we also have other investments in liquid assets ourselves. And every insurer is slightly different. So you're never going to get a perfect solution which covers all insurers' bases. It's perfectly, in the holding pattern for every insurer. So we think of, to get the most efficient holding pattern, you should partner with one insurer. Perhaps it's an insurer you like. You've decided you'd like to transact with that insurer. You partner with that one, they can give you their specific information, amount of credit-like assets, what type of PVO1 and IEO1, etc., that they're targeting for that scheme. And by sharing that information, we can get you a much more efficient holding pattern investment strategy.
And with that information, what we can do in the investment side is quite simply just expand the LDI framework we already have. We're already managing interest rate and inflation risk for pension fund clients inside LDI mandates, because that's what liability used to look like, a set of fixed cash flows with inflation sensitivity. The challenge is that now the liability is not that liability, it's the buyout liability. It's what the insurance company has. So if we've got that information, that third risk factor being credit spreads, then we can simply expand the LDI mandate to include risk tolerance to both rates, inflation, and credit spreads.
Yeah, that makes sense. And the second point you mentioned was efficient transacting. And I guess here we bring in sort of like the cost saving. What do you have to say about that? How do we do that?
Well, the first order challenge is the risk that we just covered. But if you've got time on your side to get ready whilst you're preparing for buyout, then the next question is, well, instead of investing like an insurer, can we actually invest as like the insurer that we're going to? Can we buy the actual assets that the insurer wants? Because if we could do that, then the insurer doesn't have to go out and restructure its portfolio. It's going to save transaction costs. It's going to be cheaper. Now, we know that insurance companies generally differ from pension schemes because they tend to discount their liabilities on a swaps-based discount rate, not gilts like most pension schemes. We also know that they invest in different types of credit and that they're incentivized to do so under the Solvency II guidance, but exactly which ones? So again, my next question to the insurer is how much swaps and gilts risk have you got in your LDI portfolio and what does the credit look like?
Yeah, and I completely agree with you, Matt. I think it's almost like if you're going to take the time to rebalance your investment strategy anyway, why not try and make it even more efficient for the particular insurer? And he's completely right that a key pricing factor that we will look into at the time is you're going to pay your premium with a set of assets. It's very unlikely that that's the assets we're going to hold. So we're going to then need to spend some time taking that premium portfolio, if you like, reshaping that, remoulding that into what we actually want to hold for the long term to match the liabilities, which is what Solvency II requires us to do. And so, yeah, why not share that kind of framework with your investment manager as well to say, well, if you're going to restructure this, why don't you do it in the same way? That should produce cost savings. We won't need to, that's not risks we're then taking on. And so we don't need to charge premium for that. And so from the systems point of view, you're creating a more efficient transaction, a more affordable transaction, which ultimately means, you know, more security and maybe better benefits for members. So it's a good solution all round, really.
So with that information, what we can do on the investment side is we can adapt the LDI framework, the benchmark that we're aiming to, and we can include swaps specifically inside the framework that we're heading to. Most importantly, we can simplify the total number of swaps that we have and make the portfolio as transferable, if you like, as possible to reduce the operational governance burden at execution to transfer to the insurance company. And then on the credit side of things, we're already a very large investor in buy and maintain credit mandates for our clients, which is very similar to the way that an insurance company invests. But an additional benefit is because we also manage the money for Legal & General, we also know what Solvency II looks like. We know what the constraint is, and we already filter our portfolios for that. So what we can also do is expand our buy and maintain mandates to include restrictions in the investment parameters to invest like an insurer.
So essentially mirroring what the insurer is investing and sort of working within that regulatory framework will reduce those frictional costs.
And the key point being is that if you've got time to do that when the market is ready, then it's cheaper and more efficient to do that whilst you're waiting than it is for the insurer to do it at a point in time at the point of execution. So it's all about planning and being efficient with capital.
Right, and just to bring us back to the third point, illiquid assets.
Illiquids.
Yeah, illiquids.
So as we said, we have clients, and what kind of illiquid assets are we holding? Now the irony here is that insurance companies do actually hold illiquid assets themselves for the same very good reasons that pension schemes do, which is they generate attractive returns over the long term. But unfortunately, not all illiquids are the same. So the question I have as an investor is effectively, what investments can I transfer to the insurance company that they actually want to hold? Because I'll keep those. And what do they not want? Because then I've got some time. There's something I can do with them.
No, I agree. And I think really illiquids is just an extension of what we were just talking about with the credit mandates. Every insurer will have their own view of what's a suitable illiquid asset and different durations and different aspects that they would like. But it is very much an asset specific thing and requires quite a lot of work between the scheme who's holding the assets to share information with an insurer so they can understand that those illiquid assets. And I think really the power of working in partnership here is that you can spend that time to understand that and find the right solution for those illiquid assets. It may well be that those illiquid assets, as Matt said, we will hold them ourselves in some form. So it may be, they can be just directly transferred from the pension scheme to the insurer, and that would be great. No, not many, you know, not any frictional costs, and that'd be very useful. But again, the Solvency II restrictions mean that, there are challenges to that. It's not always as simple as that. But we have seen examples with share and leaseback property or private credit which is held directly by schemes, can be transferred in that way. But if you're not going to do that, well, then what are you going to do with your illiquid assets? And again, it's not always the case that it's best to just give it to an insurer to then try and deal with the problem themselves, because that can create frictional costs as well. And if you're working over a time frame and you've got a plan to kind of be in that holding pattern while you prepare, why not look to find an alternative solution to those illiquids on the scheme's balance sheet? So that may be selling them down themselves or running them off themselves, or perhaps using some kind of deferred premium structure. There are lots of different ways to do it. I would say ultimately that the power of the partnership here is that you can share that information in that live environment, safe in the knowledge that the other risks are locked down, and you can adapt that as you go along to find the best solution all around.
So it sounds like there's lots of things a scheme can do to get to a good place to have that certainty and to transact at the end and take advantage of the position they're in right now. I guess we talked about a couple of those things that we could do. Do you have a sort of successful example of where we've done this before?
Yes, I think probably the best example is the work we've been doing with the British Steel Pension Scheme. Recently announced in our half results that we did a final transaction with them this year, but over the last couple of years we've been employing this partnership approach and now signed 4 buy-in transactions with them totaling $7.5 billion, got their scheme to fully funding. And it's really the partnership was really built on a lot of the things we've talked about here, you know, working with them to reshape their investments so that they could be ready to transact at the right time, and looking at, you know, their illiquid assets and frictional costs, and ultimately I think we've got an excellent solution for their members there.
So that sounds great, and it sounds like a lot of work went in from all sides of the partnership here. Would you say this would work for all schemes, or was it a special case for British Steel?
The principles that we've set out today around volatility and efficiency and illiquid assets, I think, apply to all schemes and at all sizes. So certainly from within LGIM, from an investment perspective, this is the way that we're evolving and changing our de-risking services for all of our clients. But predominantly, that's just an extension of the LDI framework, as I said, to include credit spreads as a third risk factor, and to expand our buy maintain mandates to make them more insurance friendly, and to combine that together with the data that we get from Legal & General to help our clients at any stage and any size to move forward on their journey to endgame.
I think every scheme is unique. Everyone has its own challenges, but you know, the principle of not quite being ready to transact for whatever reason, and therefore wanting to work with an investment solution first before moving on to an insurance solution, is one that could apply to schemes of any size. The reason why they might be in that holding pattern may be different. The actions that you are taking during that holding pattern might be taken, but ultimately, it may not. We've talked a lot today because of the market we're in. Most schemes at the moment are wanting the holding pattern is because they are fully funded and wanting to protect that position. We might be in a world in the future where schemes are looking to improve their funding position and are looking for an investment strategy which allows them to kind of improve the funding level in an appropriate way without increasing risk too highly, and transact when opportunities arise. So there's different flavors of it, but once you've got the key principle of working together in collaboration like we have been kind of as one LNG, it can have many different forms, and I think having success with the partnership is a great proof of concept and allows us to develop that, and we see this as a great way of moving forward with lots of schemes.
So it sounds like, you know, communication is very key here, so that all participants within this partnership are aligned and sort of like achieving those goals with the scheme. Do you guys have any sort of closing thoughts or pieces of advice that you can pass to our listeners?
Well, I would say that for most schemes that are in this fortuitous position, the biggest risk they face potentially is regret risk, and the regret risk that things change and they go back to the way they were before they're able to execute. So what I'd really like to implore is that pension schemes think about this risk that they're currently running, think about the volatility. And the first question to be looked at straight away really is how do I adjust my risk sensitivity to preserve or improve the buyout funding level that I've currently got?
As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in Legal & General investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of the recording and do not reflect the views of legal and general investment management. Forward-looking statements are, by their nature, subject to significant risks and uncertainties and are based on internal forecasts and assumptions and should not be relied upon. Where individual stocks are mentioned, these do not constitute a recommendation to buy or sell any security and are for illustrative purposes only. Legal and General Investment Management Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more content, you can check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website. Copyright 2023. Legal and General Investment Management Limited. All rights reserved. No part of this publication may be reproduced or transmitted in any form or by any means, including photocopying and recording, without the written permission of the publishers. This material is issued by Legal and General Investment Management Asia Limited, the licensed corporation BBB 488, regulated by the Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission. For professional investors only.